Hey everybody, welcome to Myopia Movies and the start of Season 9. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to this Disney episode, Black Hole, which we've been talking about doing for a long time because it's a famous Disney. I don't know if it was even really a huge bomb, but it was a very strange Star Wars-y knockoff movie, Star Trek-y knockoff movie. It's just weird and dated and very bizarre. Anyway, a couple new things this season. First and foremost, we're not going to surprise you with movies. We're going to try to stick to a very specific schedule and let you know the week before what movies we are doing. Now, this is early in the process, and of course, we want you to listen to the end of the podcast because that's where credits are and such. But we will also reiterate what this episode is going to be at the end, but just for the beginning, you know, just while we're getting started here. Next week episode is going to be the Vin Diesel movie Triple X, so enjoy that as well. In the meantime, I want to thank you guys for sticking with us through 8 seasons and a summer break as we return with Season 9 and Disney's Black Hole, which if you want to watch with us, you can find on Disney Plus right now. Thanks, guys. This week on Myopia Movies, we talk about the reason why Disney actually had to buy Star Wars, because when they tried to make it themselves, they made Black Hole. I'm Nick Hoffman, the host of Myopia Movies, and on panel we've got...
Charlie Rose.
Hello, this is Daniel, and I boldly go where every man has gone before.
So, for those of you who don't know, Black Hole is literally their foray into sci-fi, one of many. I mean, this is Disney. They've made a million movies. But 1977, Star Wars comes out, now called Episode 4, A New Hope, and it blows everyone away because it's a sci-fi movie that feels different. If you've ever seen old 1950s sci-fi, like the kind starring Leslie Nielsen, you know, The Day the Earth Stood Still, Forbidden Planet, all that stuff, it's very... A strong-jawed American with a blonde haircut and a crew cut is going to save the day, damn it, against those communists. Star Wars was different. But then every theater, or every studio, tried to make their own movie. I mention this because 1979 not only led us to the Muppet movie, but also came out with Alien, the first Star Trek, quote, the motion picture, among many others. And so this movie feels out of date, feels out of time, and feels like Disney, once again, missed the boat.
Yeah, well, it was their first. It was actually their first movie targeted towards adults, first PG movie. So there's that.
Oh, a PG movie, and PG. It's an adult movie.
An adult movie. Yes.
Ooh.
You know, well, they swear a couple times in this movie, and they emphasize it so much. It's like, oh, what the hell are we going to do
exactly.
now?
Exactly. Well, and they did have sort of a grisly death, and we can talk about that later when we get into
it.
The plot.
Yeah.
But man, this movie. Okay, so I have been badgering Nick to do this movie for quite some time. Not as long as I've badgered him to do Xanadu, but, you know, hey, coming soon.
Coming soon. FYI.
But I loved this movie. When it came out, I went to see it. I begged my parents to take me to see it. We went to see it. Of course, it scared the hell out of me.
Sure.
I cried. I was like 5 years old. That's what happens. But I had myself a Black Hole lunchbox. I had a little Vincent action figure. Oh my gosh. And I kid you not, 30, 40 years later, when I'm at Disney and I'm in the store and I see a Vincent pin on the wall of pins at Disney 2 years, 3 years ago, I lose my freaking mind, and I buy it immediately.
You should, because first of all, he's sunshine on a cloudy day.
Oh, absolutely. He's got all the sassiness and charm of R2-D2 with the queer coding of C-3PO.
I'm actually shocked now that Disney, of course, I'm shocked that now that Disney owns it, that there isn't like an Imperial scene where there's just him floating in the background, but a little Vincent.
Absolutely. Why not?
I mean, and I will say, so you look up 1979 sci-fi,
You have Alien this year. You have Star Trek the Motion Picture. You have Mad Max.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you have The Prophecy. Like, this is such an interesting year. The Black Hole has more in common with Space Odyssey, which also came out this year. Like, this movie, it shouldn't be in black and white, but it could be.
This feels like a movie that would have been made if Star Trek never existed, because it is such a Star Trek ripoff.
I will say, if instead of Star Trek mattering, if Twilight Zone mattered, because this feels like a Twilight Zone plot.
How so exactly?
Okay, missing ship discovered after no time, or after, you know, 20 years missing. Turns out that the guy survived on the edge of a black hole because he's obsessed with a black hole. His entire crew died, didn't it? No, it's not. They've been turned into robots.
Yep.
I mean, that is a Twilight Zone plot.
And exactly. That's the plot summary
with
for
the
this
appropriate
movie.
Reveal, and of course, the Twilight Zone ending. We will talk about that bananas ending later.
20 years too late.
Later.
Yes, we'll get there. We'll get there. And I will say, too, this movie, you know, this old shit sandwich. I was a manager once. Yeah. Give a compliment. This movie is weirdly paced, but it is gorgeous. There's practical effects up and down. There's incredible composite shots. They built some huge sets.
Yeah.
And they used them.
It kind of reminded me of Captain EO, where they spent a lot of money to make it look deliberately cheesy. But Captain EO, at least, that was the point.
Well, and like, Captain EO was filmed on old Star Wars stuff, wasn't it?
Well, George Lucas produced it, I think, so yeah.
And his drinking buddy, Frankie Ford Coppola, directed it.
Oh, they split multiple bottles of wine from Coppola's vineyard.
Yeah. and that came out 7 years after this. Yeah. So.
But you're right. It was amazing and beautiful and dark and just all these wonderful things with a plot that sort of fell apart.
I mean, so dark, in fact, that for the first 2.5 minutes, there's nothing on screen, just music playing.
Oh, this
playing.
Is worse than the Sopranos ending, where the screen just goes to black. It's like, I literally made 3 comments in my notes about, is my TV busted? What's going on here?
But you hear the music, so you know, because it's the black hole.
Well, that makes no sense, though, because that's what you do for stuff like Spartacus in 2001. That's not what you do for...
I guess they thought they were being creative or something.
Well, because Star Wars starts with black and says a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, and then John Williams throws an orchestra at you.
Yeah.
I mean, but
this is like not really that.
Yes, but that's why I was confused. I was expecting a scroll.
Yeah.
And in fact, I kept pausing it to be like, is the video
and
broken?
More importantly, the music it starts with is the more subtle music, and immediately when that tones down, it immediately shifts to this computer generated, I guess, black hole vortex thing. You know, you've got the green grid lines, yeah, and you're going around and around and around. Probably one of the first computer-generated sequences on a movie.
I will also say...
Well, here's...
No, please.
You're talking about, you know, how it's subtle at first and builds up. At the time, though, that wasn't appropriate for this sort of a movie. I mean, Star Wars, you see a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, and then... Like Nick said, you're thrown in orchestra. It immediately grabs your attention. You're forced to acknowledge what's going on screen. And then this, they just leave it black and slowly create an image that no one has any idea what it's supposed to be.
I will also say, the movie does not know what to do with that music ever.
Yes.
I mean,
that is absolutely correct. The music is amazing, but it doesn't match the movie in the scenes that it's playing.
At times, there's a shootout, and they're practically playing Calliope music.
Yeah.
Also, just because we did a Bond movie series for a while, this was composed by John Barry. John Barry, the guy who did the Bond theme.
When did he die? I thought he had died by then.
He dies in 2011.
Really?
And so he did Out of Africa, Dances with Wolves, The Scarlet Letter, Chaplin... But he's, of course, most known for the Bond theme, which is just a warbly surf guitar. But, like, to me, when I say that, it makes sense, because a lot of this almost feels like surf music when they're having a shootout with robots, which is remarkable. I will say, though, the movie to compare this to is Star Trek the Motion Picture, because the thing that they both do is take something that could have been a 45-minute episode and expand it, but also lovingly, beautifully shot shots of the ships.
Yes, absolutely.
because this has some incredible 2001-esque shots of incredible ships, but it's not building to anything. There's no tension.
Well, the most impractical ship ever.
Yes.
So much glass. Seriously.
And I will say, Spaceballs is a ripoff of Star Wars, except for that scene, because this is a ripoff of Black Hole. Yeah. Because the Spaceball 1 is this. It's panning for 20 minutes over nonsense that's made out of glass like it's a fucking sauna from the 70s. It's just, it's all, it's a glass house.
2001 did those tracking shots better with the spaceships, because first they look good, second it matched the music, so it's like, oh, we're thinking of something on a cosmic scale, you know? It's like, there are people inside those ships, but in the grand scheme of things, maybe they don't matter as much. Here, it's just, well, this is what everyone else is doing. Star Wars opened with that big Star Destroyer shot that was chasing that little rebel ship. Let's do the same thing.
Well, and that's why Star Trek to me is the interesting comparison. Yeah. Because Star Trek is saying, fuck you, Star Wars. We did it first.
Yep.
And so what do they do for the first 5 minutes but have an incredible score and establish the new Enterprise?
Yep.
Right? And they show it in every loving angle. And credit to this and Star Trek. It's all miniature work, and it looks incredible.
It looks amazing. I do like the miniature work on this, because I just like miniature work in general, but the way they use it in this movie just isn't nearly as good, even compared to the first Star Trek movie, because you're right, it's reestablishing Star Trek as, hey, we did it first, but Star Trek was already a beloved cultural icon.
Yeah, but it had died for 15 years, so they had to reintroduce it, right? But, I mean, regardless, we're talking about this movie.
This movie also did come out 2 weeks after Star Trek, the motion picture.
And did who ended up having more cultural impact?
Yes. But also, interesting fact, $20 million for Black Hole, $45 million for Star Trek.
Okay.
I think that, you know, bang for your buck, I think that $20 million was used well for Black Hole.
Why was Disney not able to outspend another studio on a sci-fi movie?
I think it's because, if I had to guess, they spent the same amount on the effects, but a lot of that money went to the cast.
Yeah.
If I had to guess, it's just...
Yeah.
And Gene Roddenberry, a lot of that went between his toes and up his nose.
Gene.
I mean, and to be fair, I think Paramount had produced Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which came out before this.
Mm-hmm.
It came out, I think, in 77. So because of that, they're like, we'll invest more in sci-fi.
Mm-hmm. Sci-fi was hot.
I mean, it was.
The late 70s, sci-fi was hot.
I mean, this is also the era of Soylent Green and Omega Man. And I guess if you were going to invest in a movie, Star Trek is more likely to have a sequel than Black Hole. Although they set up Black Hole for a sequel.
Somehow.
Yeah.
Whoa.
In one of let's move on and we'll touch upon that later.
The Gilligan's Island era we'll get to, I guess. Because that is a Gilligan's Island-esque ending. I guess I kind of touched on the plot already, but do you want to give us the plot, Charlie?
Absolutely. Okay, so basically there is a ship that is going through space, a very small ship comparatively to the Cygnus. I believe it's called the Palomino.
Palomino.
And it's got, you know, the main stars. It's got, you know, Anthony Perkins. He's playing Dr. Durant, Robert Forster, Joseph Bottoms. I don't know who that person is. Never saw him again. And then Kate McCrae and Ernest Borgnine. Okay.
Yeah, Ernest Borgnine.
Yeah. So anyway, they see this ship on an event horizon of a black hole and just sitting there. And it seems to have no life, no lights on, nothing. It just is sitting there. So of course they have to check it out. They get a little bit close. They realize that it's a gravity dead zone. Okay. There's a little bit of drama because they get caught up in a gravity tidal wave, but they eventually land and they go on the ship and they discover that there's like robots there. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Kate McCrae is very interested to find out because her father was on this ship when it disappeared. Because the story behind this ship, the Cygnus, is that apparently it was a boondoggle from like 20 years ago.
Which is the only thing Borgnine says about it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He's an old libertarian.
I mean, clearly, clearly. He is hamming it up. And, you know, and basically it disappeared. It was supposed to go out and search for habitable places to live. I
It was supposed to go boldly where no man was gone before.
Exactly. Before. But it disappeared and never returned.
I mean, and I will say, just for Sudsy's own vindication here, this screams an old Star Trek plot. Yeah. They discovered a derelict ship.
Yep.
They're trying to figure it out. Turns out there's a crazy man aboard.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing. They discover, you know, Dr. Reinhardt, who's on there, who apparently is the one who convinced the government to pay for the boondoggle.
That's right.
And so he's the only human on this ship. And he maintains that everyone left. He stayed. And built all these robots to run the ship. And so he was like, oh, the crew didn't make it back? And at that point, you sort of start to get something's wrong. Because Maximilian Schell is doing a fantastic job playing dark, broody, and creepy.
Well, that's right. He was in Judgment at Nuremberg back in the day. Yes, he
was. Subtle.
He's got the crazy hair, the crazy eyes, everything. It's crazy town. With Dr. Reiner. Okay. So then they also bring in the... the robot?
Vincent?
No, the other one. Bob.
Bob. No, not Bob. The red one.
Oh, it starts with an M. Fucking A.
M fucking A. That's the name of the Disney robot. Max?
Maxwell.
Maximilian. Maximilian.
Yes.
Okay. And I guess that's confusing.
Oh, the big hench robot.
The hench robot, yes.
We'll get there.
And so, and I forgot to mention Vincent. How can I forget Vincent? Like I said, the charm and sassiness of R2-D2 with the queer-cutting C-3PO.
Well, Roddy McDowell.
Yeah, well, you know, just saying. And interestingly enough, plot point, and I don't understand this, but whatever, Disney, magic, etc. Dr. McCrae, her purpose is to be a telepathic conduit to a robot.
You know what, though? It's very forward-thinking towards TNG, which is the empath. It's Counselor Troy.
Yeah. But she can only connect with the robot.
Yeah, it's specifically Vincent.
Like, it took me a while to understand what was going on there.
Yeah, it was strange, but apparently this is an important plot point later. So now, you know, they're like, okay, we're going to get our parts and we're going to leave. And basically Reinhardt's like, look, I'm not leaving. You can get your parts. You can leave. So they go to get the parts. Vincent discovers another robot like him.
Bob. Played by T. Boone Pickens. Or sorry.
Slim Pickens.
Sorry.
T. Boone Pickens is someone very different.
He's a musician, yes.
Yes. Yeah. Slim Pickens. And basically Bob tells him, oh yeah, no, they didn't leave. The crew did not leave. There was a mutiny. Reinhardt captured them all and turned them into robot slaves.
So that's how desperate they were to ape Stanley Kubrick. They got Slim Pickens from Dr. Strangelove in this movie.
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
And at that point, you know,
someone's got to go back to the ship and get us a shitload of dimes.
Exactly. And so Vincent, you know, telepathically tells Kate what's going on. Dr. Durant, Anthony Perkins, and he pulls a mask off, exposes the robot. Dr. Reinhardt loses his mind.
It's this crazy thing when that robot gets exposed, that corpse face.
But it's a Twilight Zone shot. Like, this is the most Twilight Zone-y
again. Yeah, it's just like, the face is just like this blank, emaciated.
And it's like ghoul. Moving its mouth but can't speak.
Yeah.
And it's like just staring into nothing.
It's a Cyberman.
Also, we need to emphasize that Anthony Perkins is playing Anthony Perkins as a mildly unhinged guy who's speaking very calmly about crazy things.
I thought that he was supposed to be the Spock character.
He is, but he's also playing Anthony Perkins.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if he's in Psycho or a friendly Persuasion. He's still just like, you know, he's not as crazy as you think he is.
But save him from getting murdered.
I disagree.
Horribly.
I disagree about that. If you see Orson Welles' The Trial, he's great in that and does the exact opposite. But yeah, no, you're right. It doesn't save him from getting horribly murdered.
I mean, that's some crazy ass shit where, like, Maximilian, the robot, the big red robot, goes all Vitamix on Anthony Perkins' heart. Like, just blenderizes it.
But also, this proves to me that this movie came out in 19 was written to be in the 1950s or 1960s because they're like, Anthony, you remember that role you played in 1960? I forget the name of it. But could you do that again, but in space?
My mother would like me to do this.
Something like Norman Fates, that character. I love that character.
And then it's just a mad dash to get off the ship before Reinhardt sails the ship into the middle of the black hole and kills them all.
That's right.
I mean, that's the plot. That's the rest of the plot.
The plot, I mean, and when we go to it, we'll get to it. But like, the fact of the matter is they established the black hole. They keep establishing the black hole. And then it's a will they, won't they with the black hole for about 45 minutes.
What is it, Chekhov's black hole?
It's really, truly something. I mean, where do we even go from here? The other than the first 2.5 minutes of blackness, it really establishes like a 1950s sci-fi movie. It's like a chamber drama that goes to different chambers. I don't know how to make
that. Well, one of the things about this movie and it's the same problem I have with the original Star Trek and a lot of other sci-fi from that era, get the stick out of everyone's ass. Everyone's so stilted and formal, and they don't feel like human beings. They feel like wind-up toys.
We talked about this when we talked about Star Wars a couple times, and we'll eventually do some the original trilogy. But like, George Lucas is not a good director. He's interested in the gleeplops and the shiny things and those establishments.
He's a master technician and special effects guy.
That's why he does better as a producer. But
except for Howard the Duck.
We'll get there. Well, we got there. Or Red Tails. But what he's really, like, he got lucky with Star Wars because he got Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, and Harrison Ford. And Harrison Ford can hold up a scene on his own. Robert Forrester and Ernest Borgnine could hold up a scene. The other two, who knows? But there's nothing to do for the actors here. Harrison Ford clearly just wrote his own dialogue or something. I don't know how that Star Wars works. Because it does. I'm not going to say it doesn't. But here, maybe it's just Disney not letting anyone have any leeway. But there's no charisma from anyone in this movie. They're just staring at each other, kind of bickering. And then Vincent opens Bartlett's quotations and says something from Julius Caesar, closes the book, and that's the end of the scene. And Robert Forrest goes, he's right.
Yeah.
That's everything. Dialogue.
He's right. God damn it.
Robert Forrester looks like he's 60 from the age he was born until the age he died.
Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, I would say he's aged well, I guess.
Well, I mean, he has like Walter Matthau syndrome where I was immediately 45 when I turned 16 and I stayed that way till the day I died.
E belly.
Yes, you're right. Robert Forrester in Death Wish 5. I wish I was dead. But I mean, like, again, this movie feels like they watched, I don't know, Towering Inferno, Poseidon Adventure.
Yeah, kind of.
And Poseidon Adventure is a good analogy. Right,
and then there. And then they're like, we didn't have an ending. And then Star Wars came out and they said we had to make it Star Warsy. That was it. Like,
well, they also kept the, I mean, the film was tight 75 minutes, right?
It was around an hour and a half.
But that's including 2.5 minutes of silence and the credits. Yeah, it's probably like 85.
Yeah, 85. Yeah, that's about right. I mean, it's paced really well, I think. Okay?
The movie moves.
I mean, it moves. I mean, you get in, they land, and like 15 minutes after they land, they figured out the plot, and then it's a race to get off the ship.
I will also say, too, earlier tonight when we were, you know, jiving and having some pizza pie, we were talking about how me and Charlie were imagining that there was just a file folder of every idea Walt ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And that once he died, they were like scrambling to make movies. Because this screams to me, it looks like that old Disney 2000 or 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Yes, especially Maximilian Schnell.
Yep. But it just has that feeling like it's a chamber drama. They're trapped against their will. What are they going to do? There's a giant thing that's threatening them. But this time, it's in space. And I like that Disney 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, but that's what this smells of.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's got your typical, like, disaster feel. You know, the second half of the movie is pretty much a disaster feel to it. And it's well done.
The effects are well done, but by that point, personally, I just didn't care really whether anyone lived or died.
Well, and the problem is, I would have liked to see the script, because I'm sure this was a script kicking around for a decade before they made it, before Star Wars, because there are those Star Wars scenes, like when they break Leia out of the prison cell and they're shooting with the stormtroopers. Well, they do that here. They're in a giant hallway and they're trying to cross a pipe bridge and people are shooting them from a catwalk 1,000 meters away. That's a scene they had to write in because of Star Wars. It stinks of Star Wars. And I will give credit again. I don't like Gene Roddenberry. He was apparently an asshole. But Star Trek had a feel and they could say, look, we should make this movie because Star Wars is a hit. But that Star Trek movie doesn't feel like a Star Wars knockoff. It feels like a fucking Star Trek movie.
With a huge budget.
$40 million, you say.
Mm.
And that's Carter bucks. Those are some expensive Carter bucks.
Was Gene Roddenberry really that much of an asshole? I know towards the end of his life, he was kind of just completely out there.
Apparently, he couldn't keep his hands off the ensign, so to speak.
I see.
But regardless, I mean, one way or another, he created a thing, and almost Scientology, and then, but like that was a known quantity, and then of course Ridley Scott went off and made Alien the same year, which that's like the those are working class long haul truckers.
So this is going to be a deep dive, and I might get something thrown at me for going on such a deep dive, but Alejandro Jodorowsky's unmade version of Dune.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many shots in this, including the mask reveal that were from those storyboards. So, and same with Star Wars, that borrowed a lot from those concepts as well. So it really does feel like they were just late to the party on so many levels, including ripping off an unmade Dune adaptation.
Well, but I don't dislike Disney. We make fun of it a lot here. But Disney is always going to be movie by committee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This feels like sci-fi by committee. And at the time, it was, I think, the biggest budget live-action movie they'd ever made.
I think you're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's...
Well, that ending is definitely a ending by committee.
Oh. What ending? The Stargate sequence knockoff?
Oh, I think that the script ended, and they were just like, you go to the archives of TV and movie and find something we can do. Because this movie ends effectively with the explosion of the ship. We'll get to. And then they just have to tack on 10 minutes where apparently man becomes machine. Everyone survives. I don't know. He ends up in hell?
Possibly with Maximilian.
Yeah, it gets so metaphysical. And you're just like, what are you saying, Disney? What are you trying to like convey? And like the other people end up in heaven?
I couldn't tell what was going on.
This is my big problem. Okay, first of all, before we get to my big problem, I want to say my favorite scene in the entire movie. It's where they're running and that big glowing burning meteorite just rolling towards
incredible
effect.
During the meteor shower?
Yes, and the big one that's rolling towards them?
Yes, okay.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it's amazing. I mean, they nailed it. They nailed it.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know how to describe this movie because it's almost an art film. If it was in Italian, it would be genius. But
well, we've got an Italian ripoff of Star Wars that MST3K did when they got revived, and that's called Star Crash.
Actually, you know what this reminds me of? If we were going to talk foreign nonsense, the Russian Solaris movie with Tarkovsky.
Oh, that
but,
is. Yeah.
But that's what
that's
it is.
That's some grade A nonsense.
It's totally grade A nonsense. But at the same time, you almost feel smart because you're watching Russian movies to begin with.
Yeah. It's grade A nonsense. It's grade A nonsense for the state.
For the state.
Okay. So, Sudsy, let's take me through this scene by scene.
Oh, I am just jumping all over the place in my notes here. They get to the black hole. There's the missing ship. Reinhardt's the only survivor. We talked about all that. And eventually, Reinhardt convinces at least Perkins to journey with him into the black hole, which
to stay.
What's the line that he meets that Perkins says at that point? Something like entry into the mind of God,
or something. It's something weird like that. Yeah,
and something about how this is outside of our known space and time, and we'll be the first to explore it. Which, you know what?
Exactly.
Okay, that's interesting. But it sounds like their objection is when Kate finds out that the entire crew was murdered. And correct me if I'm wrong here, Charlie, but is it supposed to be that Maximilian is her dad?
No.
It was Maximilian, the captain of the ship, I think, was her dad.
Right,
and
but
Maximilian was,
the robot.
Did they put Maximilian?
Yes.
No. I think the way he pitched it was he died, and then the crew got converted.
Right, okay.
Yeah, it's the way I read it was, the dad was the one person to object to the robot plan
to lead. He was trying to lead the revolt.
Well, there's other scenes where the character starts suspecting something's up, including the scene where Ernest Borgnine sees a robot with a limp and that eyes wide shut Freemason scene where they have a funeral for a robot, which
funeral for a robot is a Philip K. Dick short story.
Yes, it is.
I will also say too, I wrote in my notes when I wasn't trying to draw incredible facial hair on people. This looks like Space Mountain when they, because they get so the wound in Palomino. It one of the things that they're trying to do is they see the black hole and it's well established and that effect looks incredible.
Yeah.
But they see this derelict ship by all accounts.
Yep.
And they're approaching it, and as they approach it, it lights up like a Christmas tree, which is literally a line, or a tree on Christmas morning, which I guess.
Honestly, if you want to scene by scene, go watch Event Horizon, which came out 18 years after the fact.
Oh my God! Yes.
Great movie.
Yeah. I was gonna say though, the it's like someone watched this and then it's someone showed this movie to the architects of Epcot and said, go, dude.
Yes, because it does. And when they get sucked into the tractor beam kind of thing, it's like being on Space Mountain or on Spaceship Earth.
Yeah.
And it's flying through the stars. It looks incredible. But everything feels wrong. Star Wars, they're wearing vests and looking pretty chill, wearing that karate gi like they're about to fight Cobra Kai.
Mm-hmm.
This, it's all high cost. And again, Ernest Borgnine shows up in his fucking sweater. It's just a dude looking like Scotty showing up in a sweater.
It's Ernest Borgnine. I mean, he'll do your movie, but he's going to show up in his sweater.
And he tries to pal it up with a robot later, and it's awesome. He's like, hey, how'd the Cubs do? Anyway, so they get to the ship.
It's no good, Captain. The robot won't tell me baseball scores.
And then he's a coward, and that's kind of a great death, although it takes way too short of a time.
Yeah.
I wanted him to die.
I almost missed it, quite honestly.
Yeah, I know. Absolutely.
He's a fat coward at the end. He's like, don't worry, I'm staying behind. He flies the ship up, and it crashes immediately and explodes. Oh, that bastard. He was a coward. He bought us some time. How? You're stuck on the ship. I will also say, we've talked a lot how it's sci-fi. We also get a lot of Bond pacing because we have the dinner with the evil villain.
Yeah.
Don't worry, I'm trying to save the world, Mr. Bond. And he has an Austrian accent. The guy is Maximilian Schnell, is the actor?
Yeah.
I think I might have mispronounced it. Schell.
But he's an Austrian guy. He died in Austria. He was born in Austria. And he always sounds like, you know, Professor Von Drake. He has that strong accent. He goes, no, we're working for the benefit of all mankind. And you just see
if
that.
If they ever remake this movie, which this will be covered in final thoughts later, but I think they should, Christoph Waltz is this character.
Oh, 100%. And by the way, they remake good movies too often.
Yeah.
They should remake movies with interesting ideas. Mm-hmm. M. Night Shyamalan's movies should be remade with better directors because a lot of them have interesting ideas.
Fantastic, yeah.
This is, I had the same thought and I was casting it as an Atlantaman. Michelle looks like the Wolfman from the old commercials, mm-hmm. Ask for the Wolfman. But just that beard, he actually, I was thinking Chris Pine. He looks like Chris Pine with that big bushy beard that Chris Pine can grow. Monk, what's his name?
Tony Shalhoub.
Shalhoub should be in this too. Like, he got some Shalhoub vibes, but this movie is an interesting Twilight Zone-y idea. It just, it misses the mark.
Yeah, it's just, I hate to say it, you know, watching it as an adult, there's something off about the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what it is. Otherwise, I think it would be great because there are elements that as you watch, as you see them, you're like, that's brilliant. That's amazing. That's great. And then it comes together and it's like, oh, crap.
Well, it's like a theme park, right? It's got a bunch of amazing specific elements that were worked carefully on and cost a lot of money, but it doesn't really mean anything.
No. No, it's true. It's true. Well, like I said, you know, the music sounds like it's from a different movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The effects are amazing, but I think that they could have paired it better with the plot.
Yeah.
Some of the dialogue can get a little bit tedious.
Well, but like, and also, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on where the twists don't seem to have build up.
Yeah.
Right? Like, okay.
They rush everything, it seems.
Well, and like, okay, so theoretically, the crew gets aboard. Their mission is to get back home. But then they discover that this dude is hovering outside of a black hole. They realize that should be impossible because he's been there for nigh on a decade. Yep. Almost two decades. Well, the ship has been missing for 2 decades. We don't know how long he's been outside the black hole. And then he's planning on going through, which should be impossible. And she says at one point, is he a genius or is he insane?
Yep.
Fine. We have the animaniac set up. But then we have... Well, their mission is supposed to be to fix the ship and to leave.
Right.
She's looking for her dad, who's apparently died. Anthony Perkins wants to stay to see if he can do this. We don't realize that the robots are a threat, but they kind of are a threat because they disarmed them immediately. And then at one point, the professor grabs him by the collar and says, protect me from Maximilian. We don't know what that's ever about.
Yeah, exactly. They don't really do it. Was he lying? Was he telling the truth? What the hell's going on with that?
Meanwhile, Vincent is figuring everything out like he's fucking Scooby-Doo. And we don't know why either.
There are pointless scenes of like robot skeet shooting where Vincent and Bob go up against the henchmen on the ship.
Yeah, exactly.
The guy who used to be Maximilian, right? Like the second in command who got replaced.
Okay, yeah.
But I mean,
there's nothing more I hate than a sore loser.
Here's what I mean. I'm not writing this movie because it's 30 years old. More than that, it's almost 40 years old. 45?
No, it's more than 40 1,000 years old. It's 43, I think, at this
43.
Point.
I'm a historian. But what they should have had is more members of their own crew, and someone needed to die earlier that they're trying to figure out.
Yeah.
Because there's no reason for them to do anything.
Yeah, just let the guy... They get morally offended that he killed the crew and turned them into robots, but ultimately, I mean... He's just a crazy man who's about to kill himself anyway.
Yeah, but the problem is that when that revelation comes out... They're like, oh, we need to get the hell off. And he decides, oh, no, I'm not laying the lead. I'm going to murder them all.
Oh, right. And he starts his launch into the black hole.
Yeah.
But like, to me, that's why it works better as, like, a 45-minute Twilight Zone-esque episode.
Yeah.
Because the second you stretch this out, because remember, every scene is then filled with 5 minutes of silence as they're wandering around the ship. You're mm-hmm. like... Why the fuck is any of this happening?
Same with robot skeet shooting. Like I said, it being
robot it has, skeet shooting.
Well, you know that whole scene where.
Oh no! Yeah, I know what you're talking
it's like,
about.
It's like, do they need to be entertained?
For no one, because
I guess it was supposed to establish Bob and Vincent having camaraderie, but.
But here's the thing. So Vincent, so Bob has been an abused robot.
Yes.
Right? He's beaten up. He looks like Vincent 90% of the way, other than their eyes are different shapes. And Vincent has two, like, hand clamper things. It looks very much like the spaceship at the end of 2001, actually.
The clamps.
But Bob has, like, a ball at the end of one of his hands. I don't know what he's for, but whatever. He's a disposal droid. He's a trash man.
Okay. So basically...
What was it? Vincent
Old
was...
Old Biosanitation Battalion Labor Force 28.
That's it. And Vincent was...
I'll look it up
Vital
real quick.
Information Necessity Centralized Labor Force 396.
Yeah. He's got the Wikipedia pulled up, ladies and gentlemen.
Got it.
How else are you going to remember any of this nonsense? But the point I was... I had a point. It's so far gone. This movie is all over the place. But what I was going to say is...
You know how this movie could have been more interesting if they really wanted to play up the horror aspects but still play pay tribute to old sci-fi?
What's that?
If it was like an Island of Dr. Moreau knockoff. They go out, they find this giant space station in the middle of nowhere. There's this scientist on board. There's a bunch of robots on board. And it turns out that those robots used to be humans that he turned into robots and cyborgs through bizarre surgery.
See, that was what I was going to say. So Vincent ends up winning the shooting contest by doing this trick shot, but it ricochets and hits the other robot in the chest. What it should have happened is it hits him in the face and reveals that he's a human underneath.
Right.
And then Vincent actually sees the plot, and then he has that bit of information, which the next year, when Empire comes out, it's when they're on Cloud City, and C-3PO knows that, holy shit, the Empire's here, but he's disabled, so he can't give that information.
Mm-hmm.
The dramatic irony would have fixed everything, because then... anything just matters.
Remove the black hole and make that the plot. It's this mad scientist creating robots out of people, and the crew is next on the chopping block.
Be careful, Daniel, because that's literally the plot of Alien, which comes out the same year. There's a derelict ship in space, and for some reason, the corporation wants us to look into it. Oh, God, there's this stuff aboard.
You got a good point. But you bring up a very good point, Daniel, is that they could have emphasized the horror, given the Reinhardt a more of a motivation to be the villain.
Right.
Right now, he's
other
just,
than Ernest Borgnine, who thinks it's just tax evasion, effectively.
Yeah.
Like, you got away with this money. I'm going to report you to the feds.
Jesus.
But that's what he's coming up with his mustache and his sweater, and he's like, you know what? You're the reason why the taxes are so high. I don't know the voice
the
I'm giving.
1% need to start paying their fair share.
Thank you, Bernie. But, you know, anyway, so after a scene where we have a vegetarian feast made with vintage wine and vintage parts, there's this weird thing where Forrester goes, you know, that garden was too big for one person.
Yeah.
Fine, do the robots eat, I guess, is the point.
So basically, it's like throughout the entire movie, leading up to the big reveal, they're hinting at these robots are people.
Right.
They're people.
Silent Green is people. But yes, so it was the longest, most tedious reveal ever. And they could have, like you said, shortened it, made it more dramatic in the reveal, and done a better job with it in a short time.
I mean, or I would just love it if... So at one point near the end, what's her name? The beautiful...
Dr. Kate McCrae.
Dr. Kate McCrae. Because, of course, it's this movie. Dr. Reinhardt makes a move, kind of, sort of, and she's not interested. She wants to leave, unlike Durant, who wants to stay. So she's going to be turned into one of these robots.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you know, we have this kind of... This is the action scene. This is the very much... This is the Star Wars Han and Luke rescuing Leia scene where they're shooting the lasers, they're fighting through, they're trying to rescue her. But what would have been interesting is if there was a sixth crewmate who goes missing, and they discover when Perkins pulls off the mask that it's their missing...
That's their missing... Yes, exactly. That would have been good. I think if they did less lame hints... You know, foreshadowing, because there were some pretty lame foreshadowings.
If they just
leaned into the whole dramatic reveal, it would have been better.
Right. No stonecutter scene, in other words.
Well, I mean, like, if you're going to do the scene where he is Blofeld inviting Bond to dinner, do that. But it needs to be, but you know, whatever happened to Jeff? Dr. Jeff. You remember Dr. Jeff? He invented peanut butter. Like, you know, like, and we're looking for him. He goes, don't worry, we'll help you fix your shift. We'll make sure you go home.
I like the concept of a Dr. Jeff in this movie.
But you know what I mean? Like, the fact of the matter is, they're behind everything until the last 20 minutes.
Exactly.
It's ridiculous. Meanwhile, it's the robots. It's Bartlett's quotations versus Redneck Jim. And they're so far behind everything. I just... It would be interesting if Bob showed up earlier and then Anthony Perkins doesn't believe him because this guy's a genius.
Exactly, yeah. There are tweaks they could have done to make this better.
It feels like there's very little conflict. I mean, that's why to me it feels like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea or something, where the whole time they're so enamored with the guy until they realize, oh, he's a megalomaniac.
And at least that movie's got a giant squid.
Yeah. This has the tendrils of a black hole, you see.
Ah, of course.
Synergy. Yes.
Ah.
Never
put two and two together on that, Nick. Thank you.
Or five and five.
Oh, there you go.
When I start sounding clever, that means the movie is a little dry. The last 15 minutes of this is where action happens, and it's almost confusing. They're trying to free Kate.
Mm-hmm.
McCray.
And then get from one end of the ship to the other.
Yep.
And because this is Spaceball 1, it's like
this completely
2 miles long.
Impractical ship with glass walls.
How did they even build that and launch that into space? Was it built in space?
It had to have been built in space.
Which again?
Wait, we're talking about the mechanics. No, I don't care how it was built. It's nonsense. That ship is nonsense. It's a beautiful ship.
Except it's all the glass.
But all that glass.
But you know what, though? Star Trek establishes this because in the beginning of the first one, they're showing the space dock where they're building the motherfucker. Although I will say, you know who doesn't care about it? Star Wars. Not for a second. We don't care about how the Death Star managed to be built. We don't care about how the establishing Star Destroyer is just fucking flying through space. And you know what? It's called a Star Destroyer. You know what it does? Destroys stars. You're fine.
Absolutely.
But maybe that's why this feels more like we're watching 2001 or Star Trek or a Twilight Zone episode. You're just like, this doesn't make sense. Where's the gravelly faced smoker describing what's going on? They have Robert Forrester. He could narrate something.
Or Ernest Borgnine could narrate something.
Yeah.
It would have been a lot, and that would have been a lot more entertaining.
Anthony Perkins softly doing a captain's log. Very subtle.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't see Anthony Perkins being the narrator of a movie like this.
Oh well.
Yeah,
Mother,
enough.
Captain's log. So this movie. You can predict how it ends. The ship gets blowed up as they're launching it into the black hole. As Reinhardt is, the crew mostly escapes, but they only escape the few survivors on this,
probe ship.
Yeah. If I may, this is where, also, Ernest Borgnine chickens out and tries to fly home.
Yes. Yeah.
But the Palomino, I guess he doesn't know how to fly?
He must not know how to... I think that was what they were trying to get at, is that he's not the pilot. He doesn't know how to fly it. He screwed it up, and he crashes it.
And his crash is what triggers the explosion of the Cygnus, which... Yeah. And by the way, we also have to mention that the Cygnus is apparently the magical solution to every problem ever. Like, it has a power source.
An unlimited power source.
That's supposed to be able to power, like, the entire planet. It's created a garden which not only nearly freezes our heroes, but also is completely self-sustainable forever. Not only providing oxygen for the ship, but theoretically feeding the thousands that were on the ship originally. And it's also a ship that has an incredible computer that could navigate through the black hole had it not been Borgnine.
Well, it's like the ship, the computer was like, what, 10 stories deep or something?
Mm-hmm.
Because they had that shot where all these people are like you know, working the computer all the way down
into the core of the planet, kind of looking.
Yeah, exactly.
Power supply. And so when Borgnine blows it up, it's literally he flies into this thing and it starts to explode. And so our remaining heroes, including Vincent and all them, go into what was the probe ship that they were sending into the black hole to do readings. And so this is where we get to the hour where we describe how the fucking movie ends, because it's the most baffling thing I've ever seen.
That was the problem, is that the ship was only programmed to go into the black hole, so that was their only option.
Right. So they end up going into the black hole, even though, I guess because Reinhardt was the villain, they weren't supposed to.
I guess.
They were a little ambiguous as to whether or not that was a good thing. And if it was a quote-unquote good thing, then why... did they want to get Anthony Perkins off the ship in the first place before Maximilian killed him?
Exactly. But yeah, so they go into the black hole. Well, everyone goes into the black hole.
The survivors do. Kate does. Robert Forster dies at one point, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, well, let me clarify. Everyone goes into the black hole, including all the bodies of all the crew, as they fall into this hell landscape.
Yeah, this is where it gets real something
weird. Yeah, you see people falling from the sky into this landscape that looks like something out of Dante's Inferno.
Yeah, it does.
Okay, and
it looks like a lava lamp.
And so people are screaming in the background. There's flames and, like, Maximilian and Dr. Reinhardt are falling together, and they're falling together, and then all of a sudden...
they're merged.
Yeah, Reinhardt is inside Maximilian looking out.
Out the visor, and it's very...
I figured it was, you know, him getting his just desserts after what he did to the crew.
Yeah, it was...
It's Tommy Wiseau watching 2001 and thinking he gets it. Because that's what it is. He thinks he understands what's happening, and he's like, don't worry, I got this.
I was wrong, by the way. Robert Forster survives till the end. He does.
It's Forrester sitting next to Pitzer. McCray and Vincent. Those are the four people out. Those are
the four that survive.
And they're in like a centrifuge. And so you're just watching poor Robert Forster get more and more nauseous as we're looking up his nose.
And you know, they do this. So that's the hell version. Then they cut to the ship of the survivors. And, you know, their voices get distorted. And the scenery is like weird. And there's odd lights. And, you know, they're clearly going through something that is, you know, trying, you know. And then there's a crystal hallway with an angel at the end of it.
Well, the last shot of the movie is them flying towards an unknown planet that's basically the Star Baby from 2001, just minus the baby. It's that dark halo-looking thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's where does this crystal hall come from? You know, what's the story there?
I think you've got as good an interpretation of anyone here. It's heaven and hell.
Yeah, exactly. And that is the part that I didn't understand as a kid, and I still don't understand as a adult.
I'm not saying that that's right, because the movie doesn't make that clear. I'm just saying, at least 2001, it didn't make things clear, but there was enough there for you to figure it out, so to speak. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I almost wish... what's her name? McCray's father had gone through first, and there was, he was talking to her with her ESP. Because, like, the end doesn't matter in a lot of ways, because our heroes get away, but they end up on Gilligan's Island or something. Yeah. But it just, I don't know what the purpose of this was. They didn't have an ending, so they just gave it every possible ending.
Yeah.
Maybe a black hole is heaven and hell. Maybe it sends you through time. Maybe it sends you through space. Maybe the bad guy lost, but maybe also he got exactly what he wanted, right? Like, there's one of the first Tintin books I got. It's called The Tintin and the Broken Ear. The bad guys were willing to get the treasure so bad that literally, not only do they drown each other, that there's literally a demon poking them in the butt. It's the stupidest ending of any book I've ever read. I mean, and yet you're like, well, yeah, the bad guys have to go to hell. That's why, to me, I mean, when Sudsy said it reminds him of Event Horizon, the thing is, though, Hell shows up an hour earlier.
Yeah.
Right? You mentioned when we were talking about what we should do later this season, Satanic Panic. Like, if you make Hell a central point in this, it feels more like that. Yeah. Like, make it matter more. Don't make it like, and the bad guy loses. Fire.
And at least Event Horizon, a large part of the ending was based on how screwed people's perceptions of reality were. In this case, there's nothing.
Yeah.
No, it's... I wish they had gone with the science rather than the metaphysical. If they had made it like a wormhole.
Yeah.
You know? That would have been perfect. But yeah. No. No, heaven and hell.
Well, I mean, or if at the end... they do the full Twilight Zone and our heroes end up back at Earth early enough to stop the mission. Right? Like, dude, if you're gonna do that, do it.
Totally.
Just fucking do it.
Or throw some way into the future and monkeys have taken over the planet.
Yeah, why not? Or they have a chance to even stop the sickness from launching. Or she can go back and talk to her father.
They did that in Contact, and I remember that being very divisive.
Hey, you know what, though? At least it was a movie.
People remembered it.
True.
I mean, this is not difficult to find, but ask someone to remember it, and that's a different story.
Well, this movie was very difficult to find for a very long time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and credit to Disney for just saying fuck it and putting it out there. I hope they did this with more things, like
Song of the South. No, I'm kidding.
You know what though? I'd watch the cartoons. Like, the movie itself is weird. I did it for a class. I did a History of Georgia class. It's a very boring, very boring movie.
Yep.
But you know what? Zippity Doodah is fucking catchy, and that's why they put on those sing-along songs forever.
Yep.
But anyways, I think we've talked about this long enough. Mr. Rose, since you brought it to my attention, what would you want to say?
This movie, you know, everyone's got their science fiction movie that they loved as a kid. This is mine. This and Ice Pirates. That's probably why I'm so weird.
Yeah.
But love this movie. Love Vincent. This was my movie. This was amazing. And then I watched it years later and it was like, oh, that ending is really crappy.
Yeah.
And I think that if they had taken all the parts that worked and tossed everything that didn't, you'd have 45 minutes of a great movie.
Yeah.
I don't want to begrudge anyone that ever liked this movie at any point, but I can't imagine this finding a modern audience without a remake. It already felt dated to 70s audience. This is taking ideas that are at least 15, 20 years old. And like you said, Nick, Star Trek came out the same year, that first movie. So that was more than enough to reinvigorate that style of sci-fi. This just feels like a knockoff of Star Wars. It would have been better suited maybe as a theme park ride, which Disney again ended up doing with Captain EO anyway. Mm-hmm. And that was at least fun and short.
Yeah.
Yep. And so, no, I like the practical work. I miss practical effects, but I can't say that I really recommend this at all. It's just a hodgepodge of outdated sci-fi cliches. And even if you recognize them, you can find movies that do them much better.
Yeah, this is a very strange for like a less than 2-hour movie.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hate it. I was confused by it. It's also weird for a Disney movie because nowadays I always say Disney doesn't make a lot of bad movies. They just make a lot of mediocre movies because they're committed to death. This movie feels like a passion project for someone. I just don't know who. Like, and that's why to me, like, this era of Disney is so bizarre because parts of it really do feel like you're on an Epcot ride or Space Mountain. It doesn't have a nothing cast. I mean, Robert Forster and excuse me, Ernest Borgnine are real characters. They put a lot of thought into how Vincent looks, and you don't see a lot of wires. He's just floating down hallways. They did a lot of good work with him. And like, I imagine they didn't use industrial light magic because that was doing Star Wars at the time, and so they must have figured out their own way to do a lot of this incredible effects. This movie looks very pretty, and on a modern you know, TV. I watched it streaming on Disney Plus with a 4K TV. It looked pretty damn good still.
Yep.
And like there, I mean, we did XXX. You can see the makeup lines on Samuel L. Jackson. You can't see a lot of glitches here. So I'd say, like, here's the thing. I don't know if I'd recommend it because there's 2.5 minutes where there's a black screen and the music is just playing. But put it on at one point and just kind of watch it. It's impressive what they do. They just don't know what to do. It feels almost like a demo reel for a technology. You know what I mean? Like
the chess curse.
Right. Exactly. We're watching 3D Studio Max demo tape. But I mean, you know what? Someone made the first three prequel movies into a 2-hour movie that by editing, you could tighten this up to a 45-minute movie and it would be pretty, pretty incredible.
Yep.
And I do agree with what Sudsy said. Remake this.
Yeah.
Get a modern cast. I know he screwed up the last Star Wars movie, but give it to JJ because he did those Star Trek newer movies and those were pretty good.
I'd give it to the Duffer Brothers or someone like that.
Yeah.
Make a 6-episode Disney Plus series.
Fine.
That would be amazing.
Perfect.
Yeah. It's not a bad idea, but it's only half an idea. You just have to fill out the rest.
I want my queer-coded Vincent back.
100% queer-coded Vincent. And then the asexual McCray back. Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for sending us stuff. Thanks for reviewing us. Season 9 is underway, and we're looking for weird stuff like this because, honestly, the Disney archives are so vast. I haven't seen them all. But I'm sure someone's wearing tennis shoes at some point later this season. Thanks, guys.
Season 9 of Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and stars Daniel Suttis and Matt Quinn. The theme music is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod of Incomtech.com and is licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and review us wherever podcasts are found. Thanks, guys.